in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 167. Today I've got Aaron Fiedel back on the podcast here to talk about all the fun stuff we saw happen this year in 2019, especially kind of some surprises that we saw come out of the auction market. The more craziness you see happening this year is 2019 is kind of that year that people wanted to forget, and it couldn't get over fast enough, and here we are. But first off, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good, man. I'm enjoying the Christmas season.
Are you? What are your Christmas plans this year? It is Christmas Eve here today as we record this podcast, and I'm down the highway here in the greater Wichita Metroplex here. But
there you go. There you go. I was hoping the Metroplex part was going to come out. I've been disappointed if not. No, my Christmas plans are just kind of hanging out at the house. Had it with the boys and my folks last weekend. That was a great time, and
yep.
We'll do Brandy's mom and stepdad will come over tonight, and then her whole family will be at her mom's tomorrow, and there you go.
Right on.
And other than that, close some deals, get some deals running. And do as much sheep farming in the daylight for once as I can.
Well, you can never run too many deals. That's what I've been told anyway. I don't from the powers that be, you know. So that's a good thing we do. Right on.
We're gonna trick our computers into thinking that January 15th is actually the 3rd. So run some more stuff through.
December 31st is gonna last for 2 weeks, so it's gonna be gonna be great. All right. So, kind of as I was talking beforehand here, let's take a look at what happened in 2019. I don't care if you're in agriculture or not. It seems like everybody wants 2019 to be over and forgotten about. It feels like. So, I guess as you step back and take a look, farmers have had a horrible year with just fighting weather and commodity prices and anything and everything that could have possibly went wrong this year went wrong. And even when you had a little glimmer of hope that commodity prices were going to rebound, we're going to see that $5 corn. Sure enough, the gods of the commodity prices came back and kicked you in the balls real hard. So it's just been a crazy year. And, you know, the auction market's been no lack of craziness there either, I guess, if you really think about it. The auction market heated up in December, and it got hotter through this December. So, I guess, give me your reflections on 2019, Aaron, and what your takeaways were for the year.
You know, as I sit here at the worldwide headquarters of Open Skies Farms, I remember 2019 started kind of damn normal. You know, there was nothing crazy about it until that one. I think it was a Wednesday. Pretty sure it was a Wednesday. That one Wednesday, maybe it was a Tuesday, the blizzard hit here in March.
Right.
Which was the same time that dam broke in Spencer.
Right.
Nebraska. Yeah. And from that day on, all hell broke loose all over the whole country.
Right.
We were sitting here watching the lights flicker and power lines jump 10 feet up and down and snow covering up vehicles and shit. And then all of a sudden your phone starts going off because there's a dam that broke and flooding all over hell. And it's like, wow. Same day.
Right. Right.
Kind of from that moment on, all hell broke loose with all of 2019. But it's, right. You know, on the social media, it looks like a lot of guys are getting done, so, except for them poor damn guys in the Dakotas, they got a battle on their hands, but I know some guys in North Dakota are used to picking corn in March, so there's that.
Right. Yeah, I've talked to several guys up there who said that they'll be for sure picking corn in late February, early March, and then about the time you get that done, the field prep goes right behind that, and they're pulling planters right behind the combine. So,
exactly.
It'll be good times.
Now, you did ask me a question. I got you all sidetracked there. The auction market, I think, was, year-to-date, back to Christmas Eve last year, say December of last year, last December was pretty strong. We started the spring rolling pretty strong. I think other than, some of your one-off things that were machine repeat record breakers or whatever,
right,
through the summer and early fall, the auction market sucked.
Yeah.
Case in point, we ourselves auctioned off the combine nobody wants, the 12-13 S combine with 12 to 1700 SEP that are all over. We auctioned some of those, and they were a wreck.
Right.
And then I know, watching other guys' auctions, same thing, just like, where is the floor? Fast forward that a couple months to last week in Sullivan's big auction.
Right.
And I don't know what in the hell happened there, but I am flabbergasted, to use a fancy word, flabbergasted at what those combines brought.
Right.
Honestly, that I thought that 770 was light. I really did. Because that thing was four-wheel drive, five-speed, power cast, power rear. It was powerful. It was sexy. And I thought it was light for what it is. But, some of the random 12, 13, 14 stuff there brought big bucks. Talking combines, like, what on earth? I just couldn't believe it. So, you see some of the just online deals and what they bring. There's combine after combine at, say, 90 to 100, and those same combines last week brought 140.
Right.
So, timing's part of it. The presentation, again, obviously with any Sullivan deal, presentation is absolute to the nuts, And that all goes into play, but I was still just shocked,
I think for me, we've talked about this so many times in this podcast, probably should be a motto, but
you really should change it to Combine Auction Talk.
That's probably what we should change it to. But the idea being that the online only presence is obviously which way the industry's headed, right? There's not online only, but the online presence is hard and fast, and it's part of society now, right? It's not going anywhere. It's the invasive species that everybody knows is a pheasant now, right? So
Casey, look at the boys at Stock.
Right. Yeah.
Iron, they've let Big Iron take over the whole company. That is the whole company now.
Yep.
And they sell land. They sell land once, twice a week online.
Right. Yeah.
And I
really believe
even when equipment auctions got going online, there was nothing like that selling land online.
Right.
That was always at the community center, and we got some pictures of the ground up here, and everybody come on in and grab a coffee.
So I'm a firm believer, 100% firm believer in the online auction part of it. I think what makes Sullivan's auctions so powerful and so successful, because, time in and time out, right? I mean, you can go put auction times and big irons and anybody else that does online only stuff up there, and what you get at the live auction with the internet bidding, it's a whole nother level, right?
Like, oh,
a whole nother level of what's the word I'm looking for? Like a whole nother level of I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I mean, it's like a whole other level of someone saying, like, okay, well, I'm bidding online, but the guy here that's on the ground keeps bidding it up, so he must think it's a good machine, or he sees something that I'm not seeing, right? And you can watch that go back and forth between online and live, and you can even watch like with the Richie sales that we've been to, when you actually a physical Richie auction, and you're sitting in their freaking movie theater seating, and you got the
right
heater on, and you know, you got your nice cup of coffee, and all you're missing is someone giving you walking up in the aisle asking if you want a beer or not. And
that
experience, you know, but the back and forth between the guy in the audience and the guy online, there's something to that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like that interaction that you have there is kind of giving that next level of kind of credence to. If the guy in line is kind of wavering back and forth, like, I don't know if it's that good of a piece or not, but the guy in the audience hits it one more time, psychologically, the guy in line is going to be like, it must be as good as I think it is. Or it must be worse than I think it is, you know? And whatever it might be. So you can take pictures, you can take videos, you can do all those things, but you miss like, you know, kind of like that Jamie Johnson song, it's, you know, you should have seen it in color type of thing. It's actually seeing it with your own eyes is a whole different thing than when you actually see it in a picture. You know what I mean? I think there's something to that. And I think that's why those like Richie Sells or a Sullivan Sell or a Stefa Sell or whoever it might be that has that live auction with a web presence are a little more robust, I guess, than what you'd see on your typical, you know, internet only thing.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Internet only thing is the bottom. We all know that.
Right.
But what was shocking, you know, and again, you got a whole different worlds, but combines that are the same. And that's what was shocking, you know. That was a God bless $50,000 difference on a couple machines.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that was quite a show.
Yeah, and it was. But you, okay, so you and Chad went to that auction. What was the atmosphere like? Was it? Like, could you tell there were people there to buy, or could you tell that there were people there to see what happened?
No, I feel like people were there to buy.
Yeah.
You know, everybody. There wasn't a lot of guys off to the side kind of shooting the shit. The crowd followed the camper pretty good.
Right. Do you feel like, I mean, obviously that typical last 2 weeks of December, most people know what they've got to do and what they don't have to do, you know, tax reasons, those kind of things. This year was kind of one of those years where if you took advantage of that 430 corn, 450 corn, those kind of things before the bottom fell out of it again. You probably had some money to get rid of or, you know, I hate to say the word that, get rid of, but for tax purposes, you know, you might have had a little bit of a tax situation. Obviously, the last 2 weeks of December, you always kind of run into that. Usually the whole month of December is that way, but with the way harvest has been and everything else has fallen into place, it's that kind of was your time frame. So, you feel like that was that people have planned, you know. Cause, you know, everyone gets the Sullivan Christmas catalog in September. You know, it kind of starts laying out their fall, August September timeframe. Kind of start laying out their auctions they're going to have through the end of the year, and then you usually get one in like March. You know, it kind of lays out through the spring and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I feel like people were planning their purchases around that auction, or do you feel like it was, I need to go spend $100,000 and I'm going to go do it over here?
You know, I, the Honestly, I couldn't tell you on that, Casey. I'm not sure. I know from call volume that I'm getting, there's a lot of end of year stuff going on. A lot more than I expected. So I know that's been good. You know, obviously the year end is yet one more thing to plug into. Last week's auction of white was so strong.
Right.
So I mean, you're right, there's a lot of end of year stuff going on. Whether guys were planning that around auction purchases, I guarantee you some are. But there's lots of others that are, you know, doing dealer world too, so.
Right. Yep. The guys you're talking to now that you're getting calls from, is it a cross section of everything, or are they looking for row crop tractors and four wheel drives or more combines, or I guess what are the calls that you're getting?
Everything. It's been a pretty good cross section. Planters, sprayers, tractors, a little bit of combine action. So I mean there's a little bit of everything, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, for the most part, it's not the classical 50 to 100 range of stuff.
Yeah.
It's all been late model, low hour, you know, 1-2 year old high dollar stuff that guys are going for.
Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of interaction, you know, in the wholesale dealer to dealer stuff right now. So both for me going out trying to buy stuff, and for our guys and dealers calling me, you know. And most of the dealer stuff has been late model OR tractors.
Yeah. So that was my next question. So are the majority of the people looking for that less than 1,000 hour tractor or less than 750 hour sprayer, or what's the sweet spot you see?
I would say the most is the under 500 hour tractor.
Okay.
You know, that's the biggest one. Second would probably be sprayers, ironically enough.
Well, coming to that time of the year, though, think about it.
Well, right. I did, but the sprayer market itself has been kind of, you know, pretty down. But here it's getting some good action here year end.
That's the one thing about sprayers over the last 5 years. They get super hot and super cold. There's nothing. It never really stays consistent.
Yeah. No, there's nothing steady to them.
Yeah, I mean, one year you can't have enough sprayers. The next year, if you have one, you've got too many. And
what market does that remind you of?
Probably a little bit of the planter market, and also, oddly enough, combine market.
Four-wheel drive tractors.
Well, I don't think that also depicts where you're at, though, man.
Well, yeah.
Those four-wheel drives, like in Octavoods, four-wheel drives aren't overwhelmingly a big deal, right? But
right.
If you get to, like, West Texas and the heart of wheat country, or down around South Central Kansas, where I'm at now, four-wheel drives are a big deal.
Right. Well, yeah, they are through the, you know, you get in the Midwest Corn Belt, too, in certain pockets, tillage tractors and stuff. But even still, I mean, that four-wheel drive market, it's the same way. It gets super hot and super cold, and there's not really much steady to it. Whereas I would argue with you on combines are always falling out of bed. So just kick dirt on them as you walk by and move on down the road.
I don't think we'll see. I think combines are like a couple of years away from really kind of being in a good spot again. And the reason I say that is because we have to get through, you know, the 12, 13, 14 model combines are 5 to 7 years old now, right?
Right.
And there's so many of them that once we get the bulk of those kind of through the cycle, I don't think, I mean, I really think we're going to be back to an even keel of supply and demand.
Well, and I'm not going to disagree with you there, simply because the production numbers are way down, thank God, compared to those three model years that we were talking about. However, there is so damn many of them to still flush that it's going to be a bit.
That's what I'm saying, like 2 or 3 years from now. In 2 or 3 years from now,
right.
If you still have a 2012 or 13 or 14 model combine on your lot or in your farm, you have a what would that be?
10-year-old combine.
10-year-old, 9 to 13-year-old combine at that point. You're not trading it. You're gonna sell it to local. No one's gonna trade you out of it. You know what I mean? So you kind of hit that point now where you're just gonna take to an auction. You're gonna sell it off yourself. You're gonna. Someone from Mexico is going to come buy it from you, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like if someone does trade you for it, it's peanuts. You know, you're talking $50,000 combine or whatever.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
So you've hit the 9650 level combine at that point.
Right.
And it just is what it is.
They were 300 new, and now they're 30.
That's not that far off. I mean, if you think about
right,
about a 15-year-old combine should be my judgment and kind of looking at stuff. It's worth about 10% of what it was when it was brand new.
Yeah,
you really kind of do the math on everything that you look at. But yeah, but I had a guy. Here's a funny story. So I'm sitting up over here at my in-law's house doing some stuff on my computer, and of course down here where I'm at in Wichita, the temperature yesterday was like 59 degrees. It was unseasonably warm. So I was sitting on their back deck and I was doing some stuff and this analyst calls me. He's like, and I don't know, he had to have his facts wrong or looked at something wrong. But he said the USDA had a report out that said there were 300,000 combines in use in the United States. And I laughed. I told him that's impossible. There's no possible way that's true. And I go, I don't know. There's been 300,000 self-propelled combines produced since the first year they produced a self-propelled combine. And if you put it into perspective, there's about 250 million acres a year that gets farmed. That means that there's 300,000 combines. There's roughly like each combine's cutting 150 acres. You'd go bankrupt if you did that. I mean, you would just no possible way you could do that. So I kind of started going through math, and I was just doing some rough numbers in my head as we were talking, but I came up with the number about 55,000 combines. So I took 250 million acres at 15 acres an hour, and I got down to like I can't remember how I got to the number, but then I divided that by 300, and that got me to about 55,000 combines that were out operational in the United States right now. And then I took 75% of that number as, hey, this 75% was probably used, and then 25% was new, and that basically got me to about 15,000 combines a year, 12,000 to 15,000 combines a year that get produced new across all platforms, right? We're talking John Deere, Case, New Holland, you know, all the manufacturers, right? So, as I was sitting there, we were having this combine conversation. You think those numbers are right? You think that's pretty close?
Well, first of all, ladies and gentlemen, Casey loves to do math. Just so you all know, because I think he had some integers and the whole thing. That was a math problem right there. That was fantastic. I think the 300 is where that math gets tricky, because you know I did do a Twitter poll this spring, and that's, you know, 250 to 300 catches a lot of guys. So that's, you know, I know you're just going guesstimate averages and what have you. So yeah, it's probably That's probably pretty close. And that, you know, that takes into consideration everything from some old damn F gleaner, you know, that guy cuts 30 acres with to a guy that's going to order 3X9s as soon as he can.
Right.
You know, so there's that encompasses everything.
Right. So if you think about, if my 55,000 number of combines in use is correct, that's not counting the number of machines that are physically on the lot, right?
Right.
Those are actual machines in population, or actually there. So we're talking about having, that last report Ron gave me, I think there's probably 11 or 12,000 combines for sale on the various websites out there.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
So you're looking at 67,000 combines in out there right now, that, and we're saying that 55,000 of them are in use. So more than likely, you'd have to keep your combine population somewhere in the neighborhood of, so between about 60,000, between what's on the lot and what's being in use. And if you exceed that number, you've probably got too many combines nationally. Does that logic make sense?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It really depends on what the actual average hours the cut are right now. That's the only way you'd be able to figure that out. Right?
Right.
If the actual average is 150, well, then we got plenty of combines, right? If the actual average is 300, then we probably got too many.
Yeah.
Which is an obvious statement because there's probably too many combines in captivity right now, right?
Well, of course.
So. All right, well, that was a nice sidebar. That kind of went all over the place.
Do you want my address to send me my math degree to now? I feel like I was just in like a level 4 calculus class.
But no, I think those are the kind of questions you have to ask yourself when you're looking at the marketplace. Is how many acres of ground are there nationally? So how many acres are you going to cover with certain, like a planter, or how many hours are you going to cut, those kind of things with a combine to utilize the number of machines that are out there. And, I mean, realistically, combine-wise, you probably need to have a 25% reduction in the number of combines across the entire United States, across the board. Like, we need to, like, purge the entire universe, the entire North American market by 25%.
Yeah.
If we did that, we'd be in a great spot. And you could probably do the same with four-wheel drives. You could probably do the same with row crop tractors. And to some extent, I don't know if it's 25% is the number or not, but that would clean up the market enough to where supply and demand would be right again. It'd all work. You know what I mean?
Here, I think on combine, I think you'd have to be somewhere in, I'm not shitting you, of course. We all know that I constantly deal with combines, and sometimes you just want to smack your head into a brick wall. But I think the 25 is light on combines. Yes, due to the 12 to 14 numbers that need flushed the hell out of the system. I'd say you're probably in the 30 to 40 range there, but as far as having it be good, like, not too many.
Right. Right.
There's just too damn many older machines.
And the other problem with that, too, is the next argument people will give you on that combine thing is, oh, well, you want those combines in your AOR because then you get all that parts and service business. Absolutely right. No doubt about it. But if you're not selling them, you're not getting parts and service business. So that's where that ratio has to be. You have just enough of a demand that supply is light enough that
guys are going to be convinced to go ahead and run their combine one more year and just run it through the shop type of deal, right? That's like a perfect scenario where demand's just high enough and supply's just low enough that they can't, you know, that the ability for guys that want to go buy new stuff is there, but the guy that's on the fence of whether he wants to spend another 100 grand, put 100 grand down or 50 grand down or 200 grand down or whatever the number is, that he's going to run his combine one more year and run it through the shop. You see what I'm saying? Like, that's the perfect,
right,
scenario. And now, on the other hand, when you got, like we're in now, where supply is a little bit higher than what you want and demand isn't there, so your the actual the value of that machine is contracting, right, because there's no you don't have a captive audience that's going to go out there and buy it. Everyone's deciding to go ahead. Well, we're just going to keep our machines and run them through the shop again because, I mean, I'm not going to let someone give – I'm not going to take $80,000 for my combine. You know,
right.
So that's where we're at right now, and I think that's where the debate is. When you start really kind of looking at the overall market is how many acres of ground are we going to cover this year? How many acres is going to go into whatever crop it is and what tool we need to run that crop with? I think you got to stick with the big four, you know, combines, tractors, sprayers, planters, and really relegate what those look like and average hours and number of acres and all those kind of things to really figure out where we're going to be at and what that looks like. I think right now we've got more of a supply of everything, 12, 13, 14 models being the culprit in that, than we could possibly sell, even, you know, just by the number of people that actually use it, right?
Right. Yep.
So that means we got to open up markets in other parts of the world. You know, we got to get Eastern Europe up and running and Africa up and running and all those things. But when you do all that, you put more grain in the market, which puts pressure on the overall commodity price. So it's a kind of damn if you do, damn if you don't scenario.
Right. Yep.
So good times is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. A good deal. Well, that definitely took a big turn from the what do you think about the 2019 auction market to, hey, let's solve the world problems here on the Moving Iron podcast when it comes to the equipment.
Yeah, and they're done. They're done. Problem
we
solved.
Just figured it all out.
It's like a Christmas gift from us to the world.
That's right. Yeah, just figure out how to implement that all and we'll be right where we need to be at. Good times.
Well, that's not our part. We solve the problem. Now everybody else needs to go make it happen.
That's right. We're just here with ideas. Good or bad.
There you go, buddy.
Right on. Okay. All right, man. Well, that being said, I guess what's the biggest, give me two things. The biggest thing for 2019 that you were shocked by and the one thing that you were like, yeah, I expected that to happen.
The biggest surprise, I think, would be the amount of machines still moving. And the biggest, or the thing that I expected to have happen, you know, I guess, is the incredibly stale commodity market.
Yeah.
You know, every couple of months there's somebody that's going, oh, see, we're going to hit this turn and then this will go, and be like, I ain't believing a damn word of it until it's actually there.
Yeah.
And that's just where all that is at.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably going to be the same way that you are, that the resilience of the American farmer and their ability to keep figuring out the next best thing they can do on the farm when it comes to being efficient and doing those things has just kind of played through this year. You know what I mean? We've got plenty of stuff out there with, you know, you can't turn the news on without hearing something bad. I mean, ag news anyway, about, you know, the KC Fed's talking about how there's going to be more bankruptcies this year than there was in 2019. And then all these different things. And guys really figuring it out, making things happen. And like you see your point, the amount of inventory that we see still on the move when everything's supposed to be coming to hell in a handbasket is kind of shows me that there's some light here at the end of the tunnel. On the commodity side, I agree with what you said. I think that there's probably an opportunity this year to see some commodity prices not necessarily be to take off and run and see like $7 corn again or anything like that. But if the China Phase 1 thing gets done, and now we got the USMCA things been ratified, the thing with Japan, those kind of deals are starting to come together. They're starting to give that level of certainty starting to kind of come back into the marketplace. And
right.
we're gonna start measuring things on export reports and how the actual economics of the commodity market are actually supposed to work and what that looks like, and not by some tweet that comes out about it's actually gonna be measured on the dollars and cents and the actual economics of charts and what that looks like and those kind of things. So I'm looking forward to that in 2020, that hopefully, knock on wood, all this stuff kind of calms down a little bit. We can have a more certain marketplace based on the trend lines of the charts and not some news that comes out, which obviously news is always going to play an effect on that, but not to the effect of, you know, I will say that when I was talking to Sean Hackett the other day when we were doing the commodity report, I was like, you know, this whole phase one thing with China has always been we're 2 weeks away from a deal. Well, we've had 18 months of a 2 week period, and I'm kind of glad it's kind of coming to an end here. Hopefully everything signed off and this 2 week period of the last year and a half or 2 years will be put behind us and we can move forward now. So I guess that's my takeaway from 2019. I think there's a bit of a light in the tunnel in 2020, 2021, and we can kind of get back to some whatever the new normal is for the ag economy.
Right. I like the way you put that, 18 months of that 2 week period.
So yeah, it's been crazy, and I'm glad 2019 is rapidly coming to an end. We can start 2020, and hopefully we have a fresh new look here of how things are going to be moving forward. So keep your head on a swivel. So anyway.
Get some.
Stand by. So I guess before we lock it down here, man, you got any final thoughts you want to throw out there?
I don't. I really don't. It's just kind of... It's that time of year, you know.
Yep.
One minute you're just it's kind of the holiday chill out. The next minute, oh shit, get this deal pushed through, and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yep. Right on. No, I'll echo that same thing. One day it's back and forth all the time, but it's really all I got to say, man. I think we've had another good year of the Moving Iron podcast, and Aaron, I really appreciate you being on.
You bet. You bet. I'm always willing to jump on the casting of pods.
Right on, man. All right. Well, if people want to reach out to you and find where you're at, Aaron, what's the best way to do that?
Well, my cell phone is always on, always with me, usually always with me, 308-760-1193. You can call me there, text me there, what have you. And also very active on the Twitterverse and that would be at Aaron Fintail. And those are by far the best ways to catch me.
Well, I'm Casey Seymour. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also check out the Moving Iron LLC website at movingironllc.com, where you can find everything there is to do with the Moving Iron podcast. As well as I got a blog I post every so often about different things that are rattling in my head, so you can check that out. Also check out the Global Ag Network. That's a network that I'm on with some other great podcasters like the Dryland Farmer Podcast. Old Brent and Landon over there at the Dryland Farmer Podcast, they put on a pretty entertaining show. It's sometimes it's ag-based, but it's mostly just two guys basically just playing grab ass. It's a fun little show.
Very good. A lot of gibberish.
Yeah, it's entertaining nonetheless. Check that out. Go to the Global Ag Network website. There's a newsletter down there you can subscribe to get all the latest news about all the great podcasts that are on the Global Ag Network as well. What else? I think that's about it, man. So I guess with that, I am Casey Seymour with Aaron Fennell. Let's go move some iron, folks. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll catch you again next year. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here.